Hi, JJ.
Hey, Leticia. Hey, San Bernardino.
Hey. Hi, San Bernardino. Wow, it's the end of the year already.
It came so fast.
So there's some things to discuss before the end of the year.
Yes.
Just a few things, not too many. I mean, everyone knows the election is coming in March for several council seats. Do we want to refresh people's memory on those seats?
Yes. You want to go over that
So, okay, let's see. The first seat open is in Ward 3, which is where you ran, and we have a couple people running to replace Juan Figueroa there. And then there is Ward 5,
Yes.
which is Henry Nickel. And he's been, you know, Henry has this like really great rapport with some of his constituents. Well, he has had, he's enjoyed that. But I think he's kind of like starting to lose that now that people are seeing that he's very wishy-washy. So there might be an opportunity in Ward 5 to replace him. And then there's Ward 6, which is Basine. She is needing to probably be replaced for sure.
Yes.
And Ward 7, which is my ward and Councilman Jim Mulvihill. And he's being challenged by a few people, including our very own Esme Negrete, who has been all about holding the electeds in the city accountable and showing up and making sure that she does her share of due diligence around getting public records requests and staying kind of apprised and apprising us of the budget and what the city has been doing with their budget, right?
Yeah, that's shaping up to be a very interesting race. And I had the opportunity to ask her, why she decided to run, because I think, as most people know, she really wasn't interested in getting involved. She was supporting Jim. And during the last council meeting, I would say December 7th, she just saw a lot of red flags that she saw need to be addressed. So I'm excited to at least two candidates in that ward who are not puppets to John, who are independent, and will, I think, will challenge each other to really say the things that need to be said in this election.
Yeah, that's, you know, a lot of times when people are running and you that can be successful to win, but a lot of times they bring a conversation to the fore that needs to be had. And so and you know, that's going to be true of some of these candidates. They have issues. Some people run on one issue, some people run on several, and so we might see that there are some issues that are brought up, and you know, that people need to be talking about a narrative that has to happen to move the city forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, this if the issue that I've had and I've been able to speak to a couple candidates is there's not a conversation going on in the city with residents, and the needs are not being addressed, and the conversation needs to be new and forward thinking with whoever's running in opposition. Either at this point you are okay with what is happening in the city and who is in charge, or you're not. And
Right.
I really want to see, because the people ask me, who are you endorsing and who are this, and I'm like, I want to see what these people have to say. Because up until the other day, Jim Mulvihill came out with a, I thought, a very strong and forward message, like, this can't continue, and here's, and I want to see the other candidates step forward and separate themselves, because it is not the job of the council to function with the mayor's agenda. And I want council members that understand their role in a city council manager form of government, because that's what's going to make us or break us.
Yeah. And it's also, you have to have under it's a very delicate kind of complicated situation, because as a member, a council member, on the dais with several other wards, you do have to bring up issues and policies that are good for your constituents and your ward. That's true. But you also have to work to make sure that it's all for the greater good and it's all working for the good of the entire city. And so it's a very delicate balance. And I don't think a lot of folks understand how to really capitalize on, you know, policies that can not just improve their own ward, but also improve the city overall. Sometimes it becomes a selfish thing where, you know, you're just focused on your own constituents. And then everything gets kind of lost in that conversation, right? Where you don't get anything done because, oh, it's just, you know, that's just going to be for your ward and we're not going to look at this. And the mayor is not really supposed to have an overreaching agenda. The mayor is supposed to be more of a figurehead. The planning commission and other commissions, and along with the city manager, are supposed to come up with the blueprint for the city, right?
Yes. And that's what we lack. We lack all, everything that you're saying, we lack.
Yeah.
And
it's been tough. Like, this has been a tough year. Like, let's just be real.
Well, it has. And just so you know, for the listeners, I've put this video together because I'm sure, as you know, John did that op-ed and great, gave himself and the council a grade.
I saw that.
And so what I've done is, you know, I think what is always valuable and what makes sets us apart is we bring receipts. You know, it's what we put out is we like to make sure that there's documentation behind it. So I've done a play-by-play and I've gone through the agendas of what's been approved, what's been brought forward, and how that compares to what he says has been done. And I think it's interesting. It's worth the watch, and that'll be posted either later tonight or tomorrow morning. But you know, this year, we're hurting financially. I think we are worse off today than we were the day that people were elected.
Wow.
And we, you know, this conversation was brought forward with a couple people. They're like, well, how can you blame the mayor and his council for all of this? And I absolutely don't. I mean, the mayor and council didn't create homelessness in San Bernardino. The mayor and council didn't create bad roads. They didn't create the bankruptcy. They didn't create an ineffective police department. But what they have done is foster the environment to allow for it to not work. And that's what we've seen in this year is seven people who are completely dysfunctional, led by one, and the residents suffer. The infrastructure suffers, and they're not doing anything. Like Sandra posted that she had gone on a ride along with John in the second ward.
I saw that.
And all I could, you know, was to think to say was, that's great. How about you go build a relationship with your actual council members who are voting members? Because John's biggest boast about Sandra to the members of the community is that she has no clue how to be effective as a council member because she doesn't have the votes. Mm-hmm. And it's this type of like, it looks good, but it actually doesn't mean anything of value to the change we need to see. Like her, unless she's going to get back on John's team and help him, she's not going anywhere because she won't talk to her fellow council members.
Yeah.
And I want to see the new four come in really, really ready to work with each other, saying like, you know what, I want to see Kim and her ideas, and I want to see her foster that relationship with Lewis, and I want to see whoever is coming in the fifth and in the seventh to be all about the communication that doesn't exist.
Right. So this is the thing. You know, we've been through this before. And, you know, we get these new people that come in and we have all these like great expectations. And we have this idea that, oh, this new person is going to, come on board and be for the people, but then they don't know how to do it when they get there.
Yeah. You know
And
that I've been hearing that what you're saying right now has been on a lot of people's minds.
Yeah. There are, because it's, you know, it's a reality, and look, there's no single way to know and understand and learn how to be a council person per se, but there is plenty that you can learn and be well read on to understand the role and how you can make change in policy happen when you do get there. And I feel like that complete due diligence has not ever been something that candidates aspire to do before they get elected. And then they get up there and it's a learning curve. It's like a year long at least on just even how, just understanding how meetings are run.
Yeah.
Right? Not even getting into the actual policy making component. Just, okay, now I see how it's done. So,
yeah.
So there is, and then by the time they kind of do get in their groove and they're understanding, okay, this is how I can bring issues to the table and how I can move them, then it's time for an election and they haven't done anything. So many times, who's going to, you know, who's going to want to reelect that person? So then they spend their time campaigning.
Right. It's a vicious cycle.
It is. It is. I will tell
but
you this, having lived in the 7th Ward for 8 years now, and that's pretty much the time that Jim Mulvihill has been a council member here, he really has been, and I can say without a doubt, possibly the most unresponsive council member that I have ever come across. He does not respond to his constituents. He does not bring policy. You know, he's got this like great like bio, right? He's got this great bio. He's got this background. He's an, you know, he's a professor at Cal State. He's got, you know,
he's great on paper.
Education, his educational background is on, you know, what is it? It's like urban planning or something, right?
Yes.
But he has brought absolutely zero to the table ever. Even when there was a majority for him to be able to move something. Now, that's just unacceptable.
Right.
And just, you know, I also think that enough people don't know and realize this and will continue to vote for people who are there and like, but why? Can you name something that this person has done to make this city better? And I would challenge every person who is voting to ask themselves about the individual that is still in that chair. Does this person make my life better? Because politics is local.
So if you voted for John, he made sure to keep in touch with you, to respond to you. And that's how, like, people tell,
that's,
you know,
true.
I get, you know, we all hear it. Oh, I lost by a landslide. Well, for anybody that was paying attention, John had a base of 750 voters. We knew that coming into the election. There were, on average, for what he's done over his last two elections, about 750 people supported him, even when he ran unopposed.
There is that, because John does have a constituency base.
He does.
Look, I give him all credit for having been on the recall ballot when Jim and Wendy were recalled, and he beat it. You know why?
Yeah.
Because of the same thing. He has his base. He has those people. He knows who they are. He knows where they live. He's talked to them several times.
That's right.
He does do that. I'm going to give him credit. He does. He does go out there and he does meet the people.
But if you're not a part of that base, and this is where we come to, this is where the new 400 voters came out, because I mean, Juan only pulled about 350 or yeah, about 250 to 350 votes on his own. He didn't have the base that
no,
John did.
Absolutely not. John gave him his base. That's absolutely True. I mean,
Right. So what we have in our ward, and I think what's happening in other wards, is that the voters are like, hey, wait a minute. I didn't benefit because John told me, you know what, Treasurer? I help those that help me. That's why Juan was his candidate, because he had been supportive of John. And the voters, when and we walked door to door together, and I've heard this in the other wards, is, you know, the mayor called me. He already told me to vote for Juan. And that's those type of politics that people are feeling are like, hey, I'm not a part of this. I didn't benefit from him for 8 years, and my streets are still screwed up. And you know, how come only Little Mountain's getting paved in the fifth where Henry lives? Like, it's
yeah.
those kind of new conversations. I think people are kind of realizing they're getting the short end of the stick if they don't play nice, if they don't pat the back of the person that's supposed to be working for them.
True. And you know, I want to say something because you mentioned something that drives me absolutely crazy. When someone says you lost by a landslide, I have run for office. It's not easy at all. I actually won an elected seat. So I know what it takes to go out there and do to get elected. And even if you don't get elected, even if you don't win, even if you lost by one or 500 votes or whatever it is, the fact is, this is a democracy. Everyone wins when people participate, no matter what. Because you can't just like not want to run for something because you might lose. That's the cowardly way. And so when someone says, well, you know, you lost by a landslide, blah, blah, blah. You know what? Here's the deal. What did you do? What did you
Right.
do? Did you go out and do something? Did you put your name out there to get smeared, to get, you know, shit on? Did you do that? Because if you didn't, then stand the fuck down. Because
Well, and
any individual who goes out there and who talks to people and who knocks on doors and who does what they can for democracy and for their community, that person is a winner no matter what. It doesn't matter how many votes you get. It matters that you tried, you did your best, and it's more than 230 other thousand people did. They did nothing, right?
And you're right. No, I agree with you. I think I look at who's running. I look at the people, like, you know, doing it myself, you know, it's not to be the candidate is not the same as being the volunteer. Like it is, you know, it's nice
It's
to
not,
volunteer.
you really can't be both.
You can't. And it's really an eye-opening experience. I love it. You lose 100% of the races you never win. And in any race, there's going to be a winner and loser, but you lose when you don't give people the option. The third ward would have lost had the nine people that, you know, I would have been the 10th of the 10 people that talked to John, who he talked out of running. So that race was run because I believe that the residents should have had a choice. The people in the fifth, there's five candidates. They're running because they want the people to have a choice. And we may not all agree philosophically on policy or procedure. That, you know, that's to the counterpoint. But in all that we do, it's the value of the democracy that we want to exist in San Bernardino. It's this the fact that so many people run, like, yeah, is it strategic? Probably not, but it's still a part of this process. And I've watched online how San Bernardino operates. At least I see from John and the majority's camp is they attack residents and ask residents what they've done more than looking and holding the council accountable for what they're actually there to do. And I think that speaks to what the issue is people have sided with people and not the issues. If you're ineffective, you're ineffective. I don't care if your name is John, I don't care if your name is Susie. You're useless. And that's what we face is complete uselessness. And that's been a year. I mean, can you tell me what is better in your life that's happened in the city that the council's done? What have they positively affected in your life?
The roads actually have been getting paved in certain parts of the city. And I know because I drive kids around all day and all night, right? So the roads do get paved. But here's the problem when you don't know who to thank for that. I know that the roads are getting repaved because certain projects have been submitted because of the SB1 money that is available to the state of California, in which you have to do this and you have to provide receipts to the state or you don't get money next year, right? So I know that that's a must, that that's money that came down from the state that we pay that extra gas tax for. So I know that, but most people don't know that. So most people will see the road repaving by Cajon High School. And by the way, the roads over there are completely horrendous. I had already like my the potholes are just like crazy over there. But I know what it is, right? But if I didn't, I would think, oh, my city council's doing their job. And in a sense, they are. They're spending the money the way they're supposed to. But it's not really them. It's really the city manager and the planning department and the people who put together, which jobs are going to get done. But if you're not paying attention and you don't know who's who, you're going to think, hey, my council member's taking care of the streets here. I know what happened, but most people don't. And most people will say, well, the council's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And it's a fallacy. They're doing what
And
they
it's
have
like,
to do.
well, but it's the difference. I always call it, it's the political difference between paving and slurrying. A road looks really nice when you put oil on it. But did you really fix it? And that's the truth. I was driving down Arrowhead and I want to say 9th or something, and it's really nice. Like they've come in, they've done an entire intersection and it looks really good. And I remember Andrea having this conversation with the council in, I want to say February or March, or before, before she got fired, and about how to spend this money and what we need it for. And I think Terry and them, they helped the council allocate the funds. But I also remember Benito Barrio wanting to spend $40 million out of the reserves to fund paving in every road in our city. So I think it's,
Yeah,
you're absolutely
exactly.
like you're correct. I think understanding the importance in the division between what the council actually does and what the city does, like this is
And
these
what
are
the
top,
state mandates.
right?
Yeah,
Like
exactly.
it's these are all educational opportunities, and I what I want to see, and I challenge the people running in my ward, which Juan's gone radio silent, and of course I that's to be expected, but I want to hear what they're going to do to be different. And I want to hear this from an educated way. Like, I remember you and I used to laugh about this because when I would knock on doors and people were like, well, what are you going to do as a council member? I'm going to allocate funds to make sure that the police department is properly funded for hiring new police officers. And people looked at me like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, no. Like, we want boots on the ground. I'm like, well, I don't actually hire PD as a council member, but I make sure that they have the right budget for that, and they didn't get it, and it was lost in translation. But I need a council member to tell me that. I need someone who's running to understand that that's actually their role. They're not fighting crime. They're not Batman. They're not, you're not the garbage guy. You're not gonna be out picking up trash. You're not gonna be checking out books at the library. You're gonna be managing those funds.
Well, this is the
And that's
thing
it.
that I think that probably one of the worst things that we've seen happen this year is the loss of the code enforcement department
Oh, yeah.
and the increase in police officer duties being delegated to these other areas. I just saw in the paper today how the police department has did a cleanup in an area and San Bernardino cleaned it up and gave tickets to the homeless folks that were out there and probably threw their stuff away. That's not the role of the department. It should not be. Nor should it be the role of the police department to be in charge of the animal shelter.
Right.
And nor should it be the role of the police department to be in charge of any other department that is not crime fighting. This city has a lot of crime. There should be nothing else on their agenda, nothing else that they should be doing than focusing on making sure that crimes against the people in this city are not being committed as much as they have been in the past, right? So we should be
That's it.
decreasing our crime to make us more palatable as a community to live in. Because right now it's a laughing stock. Like, where do you live? San Bernardino. Oh, yeah, it's the most dangerous place on earth. Pretty much,
Right.
yeah. But you know what? There's a clean alley with no homeless people today. But you
Right.
know,
And
but someone down the street just got shot and killed, so there's that.
and they're still waiting on the cops. I want to, there's a business that shut down off of Kendall over by the Chase Bank and the Stater Brothers. And they were broken into, and I think it took the police to respond 4 to 6 hours.
Wow.
And they left. They closed up. They're like, you know what? We can't do this anymore here. We can't be a part of this. My neighbor's house, the people attempted to break in twice, and we called the cops. The cops have still not come. It's been almost a month now, and now the homeless people are living next to the railroad tracks. So, RPD during the bankruptcy, they were tossed everything. They were handed this animal shelter. They were handed code enforcement. Then they were handed quality of life and homelessness. And
And that's not their
that's
role.
no. And it has stretched them to their limit, but because they are mismanaged, because there is and there has not been an outside review of policies and procedures and how they're really doing, nothing changes. Now, think about this though. They've absorbed all the budget for these departments, but yet the quality of these departments have declined. Code enforcement's been cut down to 5 people now.
Yeah.
The animal shelter has lost 3 positions now and deteriorated. The homeless run rampant and they're out picking up trash.
So then my question is, are any of these departments better served and more effective because they've been gutted and replaced by police officers?
No.
So then if that's the answer, then we need people who are not going to see our police department as the people who can just pick up the trash and sell dogs from the shelter. You know what I mean? We have to pick people that respect the police department enough to know that their role is in crime and helping the city stay safe. Public safety. That's their role. And that's what they should be doing.
That's it. And if it doesn't change, and their budget keeps exploding the way, like, we're going to have county sheriff. We cannot sustain this system. It's not feasible. It's not financially at all going to happen.
And
And
the only way
as
to change it is to vote in people who don't have this mindset that the police officer should bear the brunt of all of our, junk departments that no one else wants. You know what I mean? Give them enough respect. Yeah, I can't even believe I'm saying that, but I am.
well, because we have, see, this is the thing. We have a great police department. We have great officers. But what we have at the top are about 4 people who see the forest for the trees. They see this unsustainable system. They see the out of classification work that they're doing, and they're like, okay, we know this isn't going to last forever, so we're going to get ours. And in the interim, the people suffer because if the city manager was smart, and this is what Sandra was speaking to, although she is completely ineffective at the dais, all of these quality of life and the animal shelter and code enforcement and coming up with the city clerk and the city attorney's office are all a part of an administrative services department or even a quality of life department, which could have been overseen by one director or the assistant city manager. and then given a director or given a manager to manage each division. Or you could have put code enforcement back into community development where it belongs.
Yeah, because they're
But
not, they think they're saving money, but they're not. Like, whenever a
no.
department is now ineffective and inept and inept, it can't, that's not saving money. You're wasting money, actually.
You can't pay an officer 75 whatever dollars an hour to go write tickets for not having a for parking on your grass. Like that's insane. You can't. Why are our officers out collecting carts from Target?
Yeah.
Like that's not their role. And I want them fighting the bad guys. I want us to have some badass cops in San Bernardino where it's like, holy crap, like you don't want to screw up there. You don't want to do that. But we live in two different realities. There's a portion of San Bernardino that lives in fear, in violence, in unknown circumstances, and then the rest of us don't have that. I'm
Yeah.
not afraid in San Bernardino what's. I've never been afraid to go anywhere in San Bernardino. I don't understand the statistic, but it exists.
Well, and I wouldn't say that I'm afraid to drive through most of San Bernardino, but there are parts I wouldn't get off and walk a block in, for sure. There's that, but
Absolutely,
there's
but
also parts of San Bernardino that I feel that everyone knows are the hot spots. It's not a secret. I wouldn't want my kids hanging out there, and I feel sad that other people have to have their kids hanging out there. Because, and no one is there to protect them because they're busy, clearing out an alley for, of homeless people, or
yeah.
they're busy picking up trash, or they're busy being code enforcement officers ticketing RVs and whatnot. And because of that, these kids are being forced to play in areas that are very unsafe.
Right, walking to school while people are beating up their wives in the street is what somebody called me and told me.
Yeah.
And they're watching, you're being offered drugs. I mean, I don't understand. There is a certain business that people know that's where drugs are bought and sold and gang members hang out at. I've never seen a cop there ever. I'm thinking, why wouldn't you have a cop patrol that area if we
Because
all
if
know
you
in the
know about it,
community?
they gotta know about it.
Exactly. Like, we know that's where you don't go. If you want this particular item, you go somewhere else to get it because this place right here, this is what happens here. And that's general community knowledge. So, where is the police department? Why aren't they parked on that corner? Why aren't they in and out of that business?
Yeah.
That's the thing. And how can you only have 10 officers per patrol?
And these are the things that people have to think about when they are getting their ballots. They have to ask these questions of themselves, of their elected officials. They have to look at the record that these folks have created for themselves. I really think that people need to really pay more attention to the very specific attention to the council, school board, and board of supervisor races because those people affect us. Like I said, every day, all the time, so it's important to pay attention to all of it. Yeah, okay, we get it. You want to watch 20,000 debates and, listen to Fox News and see what Trump is saying to get the whole, presidential picture. It's more than
That's
that,
right.
and it's at the bottom tick of the ticket.
And don't wait for these people to knock on your door. That's something else. They're not gonna make it to everyone. It's basically almost impossible to knock on every door. But
If a
in the
person does
interim,
not make it to my door and I want to know who they are, I will call them up. I will call the number on their flyer and
that's
I will
right.
ask them, where do you
Meet
stand
them.
on this?
And exactly, one of the candidates in the fifth ward was having conversation on Facebook, posted a video, and they said, I want X, Y, and Z, and I was like, okay, so what are your plans individually? And someone wrote me, and they're like, oh, that's you're being really you're asking really tough questions, and
Well,
I was like,
that's
he, I said, well, this person's trying to
a
be in
tough
charge of
question is
120.
Section 1BC of the General Code states that blah, 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 blah. That's a hard question. A question like, what are you personally going to do? It's not a hard question.
Right. But I want, we need to start asking the tough questions. This is not a popularity contest. I like,
No.
you know, I don't care about being popular. I care about being transparent. And I'm not going to say things so people like me because there are enough people willing to do that. That's, if someone's going to tell you what you want to hear, you're never going to get better, San Bernardino.
Yeah.
That's their issue
It
is,
is true.
are you a fan? Are you a cheerleader? Or are you a voter? Are you a resident? Because you got to pick. You
Yeah.
know, you're either going to stand on the sidewalk and wave, or you're going to be in the parade. There's no in between.
That's true.
So
So we
I
have
think.
this, like, really, I really think that this is a very important election, and we have to take it very seriously. People in the city need to take this election very seriously because it's a matter of solvency and insolvency.
Yes.
And so it really needs to be taken seriously, and I hope that people will do that. You know, the election is in March. It'll be a runoff unless an individual can get 50% or more of the vote in the primary. That's how we do things here in San Bernardino, which I also don't agree with. I think we should just have winner take all in November. But that's, you know, that's sayest the charter, right? So that's how we do things. And look, the city has a lot of problems. They're not going to be solved overnight. We've had this conversation. We've been having through this podcast, through your Facebook videos, through other mediums and other ways. We've communicated that this is so important because we will not go into bankruptcy again. What will happen is that we will have to start dissolving and disincorporating. And that would be historical, monumental, and pretty crappy because we'd be probably the first city to have to do that, right?
It would be catastrophic to the residents to.
Well, yeah, it
to
would
what
be,
it would be.
especially for property owners.
We're like, this is the thing. We're about a, what, 120-year institution, and we failed. That bankruptcy was a failure, and
well,
it's
everything. The bankruptcy was a failure. The rechartering of this city was completely a failure because you had a system in place for 100 years, but because you didn't like a political person,
right?
One person, you wrote this crazy ass new charter that does nothing to protect the residents or the city, or for that matter, doesn't even do anything to really delineate what role the council has. I mean, it says that they're in charge, but they're not. You know, you have a wayward and rogue mayor who is taking advantage of the vague and ambiguous language in this very poorly written charter. And so as a result, the city is suffering all this. It didn't have to be that way because some group of people hated one person so much that they made the entire, threw the entire constitution out the window. Can you imagine if the United States did that? Like, what if we had just like, this constitution is trash. Let's start over with a thin one that has no teeth in it.
We would be France.
So it's the same thing. People have to look at it the same way because the charter is the constitution of the city. So I was like, wow, this is going to be really bad. and it's, you know, but
yeah.
So it's so super important to have people that truly care about the city and truly care about the community and the people in it to be representatives at the dais, for sure.
That's it. This, like you said, this is going to make break the city. 2020 and this coming up budget, I'm really interested in seeing where the mid-year budget review is going to be and what what the added expenditures were. I've gone through and added them up on my own, but there's always more or less. And you know, with the pending lawsuits, the cannabis industry, like we've accomplished none of the big stuff that we were set out to accomplish.
And
So
it's that, okay, so that is like so infuriating because you're talking about the budget and it's the most important thing that a person that is running for council should understand. You need to understand that budget backward, forward, inside out. You need to understand what every penny is for and not for. You need to know what's in the budget. I like that's like if you don't do anything else that, as a candidate, please figure out the budget and understand it so you can answer questions about it and that you can make good choices when voting for your budget. You know,
right.
because I think that it's just you can't have people that don't understand something vote on it. I
And that's
mean,
what's happened. Where we are, where we are. You know, we have had years of voting on the budget without understanding what was in it,
it's
what it.
not hard to understand. You just have to sit down and go through it. And if you have to ask questions, write them down, Google them, ask somebody who knows. There's a thousand ways to figure out right how a budget is being put together in your city, right?
And
So
they can work. The council, I hope this realizes that the city manager and the city staff are allies, not the adversaries that they've created, that there's this them versus us attitude. Because the uneducated, unqualified council fights
yeah.
for against the very qualified, educated staff, the experts that are there to answer their questions. And I know for years when I was with the city that the council fought sitting down with the city manager to find out information. It wasn't just Andrea or Charles or Brian or Alan. It's been all of them. Now it's Terry. Like, they literally fight knowledge like it's witchcraft.
So it's good to ask questions of the city manager. It's good to ask questions of people in the administration. Yes. However, you as a council person need to have your own basic understanding and knowledge of the budget and everything in it because you don't want to be okey-doked
Right.
by whatever they might be telling you because they're going to tell you what you need to know and what they want you to know. The rest, you have to find out on your own. You have to be smart enough to say, but wait a minute. This is blah, 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 whatever it is, right?
Sandra does that. I've noted, I like when Sandra does that.
Yeah. But
She
if
she's
you don't know better, then you can be told whatever. You know, you can't. Albert Einstein said it best. It's a mantra I love, and that is question everything.
That's it. Didn't you know it? It I don't. I can't understand the complacency, the continuation and promotion of mediocrity, because you have a mediocre city, because you have a mediocre council, because you have mediocre expectations,
Yeah.
and wanting to raise this city up is going to require the residents to rise up and say, we deserve better. Everybody around us has become successful. What is it that we're not doing? We have all the same things. What are we lacking? Oh, qualified leadership. Got it.
Qualified leadership and I was talking to Joe Baca Jr., who's running for the Board of Supervisors, the county level. And I asked him, how did you guys get all those projects in Rialto done? That was, I mean, I don't know if you've been over to the Renaissance area of Rialto where they have this whole new shopping center. It's like Plaza.
Yeah, that's Scott Beard's project.
Well, it's pretty great for the residents of Rialto, to be honest with you,
Oh, it's been amazing.
because they have everything there. There's restaurants. They just got a Sonic. And he's like, it was just we didn't get along on every single item, he said. But you know what? We just worked together as closely as we could, and we just tried to stay consistent and just like barreling through when we got to get this done. And we don't have that in San Bernardino. You know, and
One,
we've got space to do these things, but you
yeah.
know, I just drive through there. Like I take the 210 all the time and I drive to Rialto and I'm like, why is this happening here and not in San Bernardino? Kind of
Because
sucks.
every time there's an election, everything flips on its head. That's the thing. We look at this general plan, and the general plan didn't expire out of just
That is,
he
you're
got
right. That's the
busy.
big thing. We don't have a plan. That's true.
That's right. And because we don't have a general plan, whoever comes in with their idea and their vision and what they want. That's why the building code hasn't been updated since 1986. Jim Mulvihill wrote some of the laws that are still in effect today.
Ew.
Give me a break. Like, and we wonder and we sit and we think. That's why people hold on to 1976 and 77 so much, because they're living in the past. They're living
Yeah.
in what used to work that no longer works, and that will continue to fail us.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. So it's going to be, there's supposed to be a meeting January 2nd. The agenda items or agenda hasn't been posted yet, but I'm keeping track. And I want to see, we're in a city where residents are doing GoFundMe accounts for Christmas trees. The mayor's off at the Hilton in Canada, and we've got the highest crime rate in the nation. So
And I would just like to say about that, because I
yes.
know people are like, hey, what's the big deal? He's still representing, he's sending people to go to these things. Here's what you need to understand about the position of the mayor. The position of the mayor under this current cheesy charter is he is the figurehead of the city. So if you wanted the job of being the person that shows up at all these things, and then you don't show up to all these things, hello?
Right,
Then why are
and
you the mayor? Be a council person.
that's right. And why are we paying $44 an hour for two people to show up and do that job? If the job of the
Exactly,
mayor
because
can
we're
be
paying
done
the
for
mayor a full-time
$44,
salary.
that's right. Why are we doing this? And that's the crux of it. It's, you know what? Plus, you have city employees working.
This is also people that just do not want to hold people accountable no matter what. They just want to just, you know,
Yeah.
it doesn't matter what this person does. They're always going to be 100% right. Look, why can't you just humble yourself enough to say, you know what? The mayor should probably show up for shit.
That's right. Or not represent like he is there. And
Exactly. It's like a total, I fell for it too. I was like, oh, good for him. He showed up.
I was actually, this is the thing that upset. I think that's why I was like, are you kidding me? Because I was telling everybody, you know what, dude? John's actually showing up to things right now. So maybe he's got a new attitude. Maybe he's turned around and realized that, being there is important. And then I find out he's not there. And my tax dollars are going to support his two interns. And that's the thing is that's money to fund a cop. That's money to fund code enforcement. Like, we're broke. So every dime matters. And what the mayor does matters. It matters. And until people
Well,
realize that this stuff
it
matters,
does, yeah.
then more of the same. So this has been a great review. Like I said, I'm going to be posting that video for the a tale of the tape compared to the agendas. And then I've got a couple upcoming YouTube videos that are kind of basically what we've been talking about, the difference between council and city managers and what an agenda is, what a budget is. So
So that's it
next
for
year's.
the end of the year. I want to give, I think you and I both should give like a one sentence piece of advice to our listeners and our people who are paying attention and listening to the podcast and hearing you out there being outspoken. And I just have one piece of advice on this, you know, almost new year, you know, tw on ending the decade here and going into 2020. And that is this. pay attention. Pay attention. That's all we can do is just pay attention, right? So that's my advice to the people of San Bernardino, because it's important.
Yeah. My advice is do your homework.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we talk about and that is happening is either on the agenda or in the budget. None of this is unknown information. So show up, hear the conversations, and give yourself that educated opportunity to know for yourself. Don't let other people tell you. Although we this is what we talk about, we hope you take this information out and be like, okay, this is what they said, now let me go see.
Yeah, exactly. We are not trying to, like, you know, tell you what to do. We're just telling you what it is.
Exactly.
So, hey, everybody, thanks a lot for listening. This was our first year together. I've had a blast. Treasure, it's been great.
Yes, thank you so much.
We're looking forward to 2020. And we just want to thank you guys we have a little small base, but we'll get there.
Hey, you know what? We got 50 hits last time. I'm very excited. So keep going, San Bernardino.
Yes.
Happy
keep
New Year.
Real, everybody. Happy New Year.
All right, bye.